Welcome, everybody. This is the Business Beyond Performance podcast, episode number 18. I am Matt Powell. I don't even get a freaking adjective anymore. And that is the, where do you want me to go? I don't even know. Genius Joe Staub, with how much you've been killing your game lately. I'm gonna give it to you, man. It sounds like you've been killing it work lately. Tell us about that.
Genius. Damn. Yeah, that is, I know. That's a first. That's
genius. I know Rachel doesn't call you that, so I was trying to give you something different.
Genius with a J, like we like messing with it a little bit. And no, you got to give yourself an adjective. If you're going to do the intro, you got to adjective yourself.
All right. All right. I'll work on that next time. I'm going to go with the average Matt Powell compared to the genius Joe Staub.
I think that has a good ring. I like that. It's got a good, it's got a nice sound.
I'm going with humble next episode. Humble will be the word for sure.
Beautiful.
So how's work going, man? How's life?
Work is good. Life is good. Busy. There's some investor things going on and just new product launches and building a team and doing some other fun things. So I'm getting to play a really cool part in a lot of different parts, if that makes sense. So with that, right, how about this? Our guest tonight, you want to hear like the 6 degrees of like Kevin Bacon?
I would love to.
So Nick Serra, combine training in Greenwich, Connecticut now, was a Hofstra master's student, an intern for me. So I taught him when I was an adjunct at Hofstra, and he interned for me when I was the head strength coach. Before that, he was a UConn swimmer who I coached when I was a GA. And I think you even coached him for like a semester in there somewhere.
I did. It was right before I went to go work for the Browns. I helped out Zach Penwell. Mm-hmm. Hello, Zach, wherever you are in the world. Up in Alaska. And actually got to work with Nick a few times as an athlete. So did not know him well. It was definitely a large team, and I definitely was just filling in. But small world for sure.
Yeah, and how about this? Even smaller world. My wife at UConn had to do one of those teach athlete classes. So she was a senior. Nick was a freshman, and Rach was like the senior athlete in the first year experience class for the little athletes, being like, hey, this is what you do. This is how it works. So he actually got coached by not only me, but technically my wife at one point too.
So you guys have a small impact on Nick's life is what I'm hearing.
You know, a tiny bit. Hopefully it wasn't a negative one. We, you know, there's some questions there. But so this is the interesting thing about Nick and what brought him to us, right? One, great IQ, great coach, high level athlete, great EQ, has the people skills, has been very successful in the private setting. And also, and he gets into it a little bit with the company he worked for, and the owner of the business had a traumatic accident, was a triathlon, and got into a bike accident, was physically unable to be on the floor, coach, and he was out for months. So Nick was able to step in and manage not only the coaching, but had to take on the business, making sure payroll, making sure things got done. And he gets into that with the owner and the owner's wife basically moved a lot of responsibility to Nick because they were dealing with the owner's injuries. You know, unfortunately now he's okay and he's made a full recovery, but it was just one of those things where, you know, he worked hard, he grinded, he had the people skills. And then through kind of a series of unfortunate events, he was able to rise to a challenge. And then he's able to rise to a bigger challenge in COVID and manage his clients and keep the business going when, you know, pretty much the gym industry died flat during 2020. And he gets into that too. So it's a real great story of not only kind of making your path, but stepping up when adversity comes and either learning on the fly or finding ways to overcome the challenges placed in front of you.
Absolutely. You summed it up perfectly. The only thing I'll add before I kind of wrap up this intro is that the man literally drove around with thousands of pounds of weight room equipment in the back of a Civic or a Toyota? Sort of a small sedan.
I want to say, or even might have been like a Jeep. He used to drive a Jeep. So maybe it was a Jeep or a small car. And then he had to get an Explorer. And I think he burned out a car during 2020 because of how much, one, how many miles he put on it. And then two, like he blew the suspension out because he had 800, 900 pounds in plates, hundreds of pounds in bars, like all the stuff in the trunk every day.
If that's not dedication to your craft, I don't know what is. So to sum it up, here we go. Episode number 18, Nick Serra. Joe, if there is one unofficial sponsor throughout our entire podcast, all the episodes we've done so far, I think we're up to like 15 by now. Who would you choose?
Well, Matt, we're actually up to 19. And the reason I know is because I write it all down in my rocket book, right? So I got the little one right here. I got the full size one on the desk, right? It's something I use every day in my personal and professional life. It's been a tool that the last 2 years since I found it has, you know, from an efficiency standpoint, has changed the way I take notes, has changed the way my crappy handwriting can be digitized into, you know, typed Word documents for ease of use to send in emails and everything. So I would highly recommend, if you don't know what Rocketbook is, check them out, get one, use it for a few months. I guarantee it'll change your life. Want to give an unofficial sponsorship shout out to Dr. Jim Stepani, Dr. Tim Sheets, and Vince Andrich, the later of the two who have both already been on the podcast, and JYM Supplement Science. So JYM, kind of like Jim with a J, Supplement Science.
Yeah, absolutely. Great product. Something that we definitely have been used quite a bit over the years. Great protein. And the thing that we both really appreciate about them is they actually have research behind everything. Dr. Tim Sheet, as you mentioned, who's been on the podcast before, went through and explained how they actually do the research, unlike most companies in the supplement industry. And they actually give out information that makes sense, and they help people decide what supplements are best for them, even if it doesn't mean they go with their company. But they prove time and time again that science and the research behind it are the reason why these supplements work. And then they give those, you know, powering statements and empowering movements to help these people make the best decisions for them and their individual needs as a consumer.
No, and again, never hurts that they're UConn guys either. but no, definitely JYM Supplement Science. Check them out. Again, it's top quality products with the research to support them. And if it's a brand you're not familiar with, it's something you should be familiar with, either yourself or your athletes.
For sure.
Welcome to another episode. I'm joined by the beautiful co-host, Matt Powell. I'm Joe Staub, and tonight we have Nick Serra. So Nick is actually someone who I've known now for gotta be a decade, right?
Yeah, 2009. Yeah.
Yeah. So me and Nick first crossed paths when I was a GA at UConn, yet another UConn person. It's an interesting trend, though. We've had quite a few UConn people here, totally different timelines in terms of their time at UConn, totally different backgrounds and industries, but all very successful people. So shout out to all the people at UConn who've been on and all the people at UConn have gone on to be successful people and things.
Right.
It's like it's a good school or something. so Nick was a swimmer on the UConn swim team when I was a strength and conditioning GA, and I inherited the swim team as one of my team responsibilities. So that's how I first met Nick. Flash forward a couple of years, you know, I leave, I go off to Kansas as a strength coach. Nick finishes his swimming career, and, you know, he's back in New York where he's originally from in Long Island. And he's working and grinding and hustling and doing all the things he's trying to do, you know, as a young post-college kid to try and make his life happen. And I'm now the director of strength and conditioning at Hofstra. And all of a sudden, Nick Serra's in the master's program at Hofstra. And he's an intern in the Hofstra strength and conditioning department. So, you know, now my first knowing you at UConn with all the people we knew there and the coaches and the staff, now I have a whole second experience with you as, you know, a late 20s, you know, I come back to school, you're getting your master's degree, you're bettering yourself educationally, you're putting the time in interning with us in the collegiate space while still working in the private space. You know, I believe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've done over the years, you've done both the sport side of coaching swimming and coaching the strength and conditioning performance side at all levels. You know, whether it be camps, clinics, private setting, personal training, collegiate strength and conditioning, all the different things. And now you are currently, you know, the number two guy at Combine Training in Greenwich, Connecticut. So I'm in Connecticut. I'm about 45 to 50 minutes north of you. You know, I haven't seen you in person a little bit, but we talk pretty regularly on the phone as two guys just catching up with mutual interests. So the question is, Nick, how has life been for you working in the private fitness, private performance setting in the COVID era? And then also, how's just life in general and, you know, everything I just mentioned about you? Where are you now?
So thank you for the introduction. Thank you for the opportunity for me to speak. So this year has definitely been different than most years. I mean, everyone can attest to that. Everyone's life has been turned upside down. And I can honestly say that this year is kind of special in a way, just because you're getting thrown a curveball. And now you have to, you know, you are very comfortable in the way, you know, you go to work every day, you have X amount of clients, and then you go home. But now all of a sudden we have a pandemic that hits and you get shut down. And the next thing you know, I'm sitting there for about an hour after we get shut down. I'm like, what do I do now? And it probably took me about, you know, a couple hours. I sat down with my wife, Katie, who actually is a swimmer and knows Joe well too.
I was gonna say also a UConn swimmer.
And I was just like, all right, like, what am I gonna do? And she's like, you know, we were talking about it, and I said, you know, I'm gonna get up tomorrow morning, I'm going back to the gym. And she's like, but it's shut down. I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I'm gonna go to the gym, I'm gonna pack up my car, and I'm gonna just start calling people. And from there, I mean, the first 2 weeks of COVID was a little bit of a challenge just because I wasn't sure how I was going to train everyone still. So started off with a couple of my high school athletes that are really, you know, these kids are my studs. They're trying to get recruited. They're, you know, they're still trying to, you know, get recognized by different colleges. So I started with them for the first 2 weeks. So I wasn't really that busy. And P.S. before COVID, I was working 70, 80 hour weeks, you know, training, you know, probably working 70, 80 hour weeks, probably training 65 hours worth. And so now I'm down to like, not even 20. And I'm like, okay, like, how am I going to make money? How am I going to survive? How am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to pay my car bills? All that other stuff. And slowly but surely, I started just trying to be strategic of, okay, who am I going to train today? Where should I be in Greenwich? And then on other days, am I going to start traveling more north towards like the Westport, Southport area, and then start making my way down? So within about 3 weeks, you know, post-closure, I started, you know, figuring out a schedule. On top of all of this, I actually was about to get a contract with the house that wound up falling through because Katie's a manager at SoulCycle. She got shut down 2 days before I did. And then I got shut down. So I'm calling obviously the bank and I'm like, please do not approve me of this loan because I can't pay for it now. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen, you know. You had no idea what the future was going to hold at this point. So we axed that. Obviously, we were really upset about it. And at that point, our landlord also found another leaser to come in. So we were out of our apartment within about a couple weeks after that. So it threw us upside down for a loop. You know, Katie's moving in with my parents now and me, you know. You know, living with your in-laws, probably not the funnest part, but I mean, we had to make do with it because there was no other option right there. So moved back down to Long Island and I was commuting every day from New Hyde Park, which is about 10 minutes off the Throgs Neck, to Greenwich, to Westport, to Norwalk. Anywhere I had clients that day, I was traveling. So I probably put, I think I told you, Joe, like 8,000, 9,000 miles in my car within about 3 month span, just because I would not let a client go. I was doing everything in my power to still train people. So I started, you know,
Nick, give me 1 second. So for anyone listening who's not familiar with the Northeast part of the United States, look at a map. He's in Long Island, New York, and, you know, kind of not all the way at the end in the Hamptons or any of that, but he's in Long Island, New York, right? If you actually Google Hofstra, pretty close to that area. So that way, that part of the island, the first third of the island. So he's driving all the way around, up and around past New York City. You know, New York City's on his left. He's driving around. He's coming up into Connecticut. Now, he's not going same thing. He's not going way up into Connecticut, up into Massachusetts, but you're going through New York City area up into Connecticut on one of the most major
Bronx, areas. New Rochelle, Mamaronek, Larchmont.
And we're also talking in the middle of a pandemic, and we're also talking across all these things. So, okay, go, just for people to have context of you're doing 50 miles as the crow flies, but you're doing 100 miles in a car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's from my parents' house to the door of Combine's about 37 miles. And then my furthest client from my parents' front door to his front door was probably 80. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was one direct shot. Then now I'm starting to make my way back down towards Greenwich. And then I work all of Greenwich all day. And then I came back down. I was probably putting over 1,000 miles a week in the car. It was crazy. But like, these kids for the most part did not want to stop training, and I wasn't going to let them, go to nothing. That's just not who I am. Like I made a commitment to these kids, and even these adults too, that I train, I made a commitment to them. I was going to do whatever I could to train them. So, I mean, it took a little while obviously to figure out the schedule, but it made me definitely appreciate the job that I had when I was in the gym, but it made me appreciate more because it made me work that much harder.
And just so everyone understands what we're talking about, we're talking about you driving all around with equipment, you're wiping stuff down, you're sanitizing it, you're going to people's houses, training them outside, training them in the garage, social distancing, you're not hands-on as a coach. So you're using all the constraints of the pandemic situation while trying to do your best you can to provide a service while driving 8 hours a day around the world to do it. So it's not like we're saying, you just showed up to people's houses and you're, just doing whatever. Like, you're also taking into consideration all of these other factors given the state of safety, the state of the world. So it's more time, it's more effort, it's more energy, it's more stuff. It's not as simple as they walk into the gym, you go, you wipe the bar down, next.
Yeah. I mean, all my clients are paying, depending on what kind of pack, it's all based on packages, but a single session with us costs $138 an hour. It's a lot of money. They're paying a premium to train with me, and I'm going to give them a premium service. Every couple days I would sit down and I would just try to look at what I would do for training wise, because I only was limited to the amount of equipment I could put in the car and also the amount of time I could unload and reload and clean and get to the next house. I was trying to give myself, anywhere between half an hour and 45 minutes to do so, just to make sure I was giving them a full hour. I never will cheap out even on like 2 minutes. Like, even though they're like, oh, we're done, I'm like, nope, got to stretch something else. Like, I always stayed on top of everything with that. It really was, definitely difficult at first, but I got used to it. And it was definitely a blessing in disguise, because it just made me work that much harder when I got back to the gym. A lot of people were very uncomfortable at first. They was just all, is it safe in there? What are you guys doing? What's your protocol? Every day now that we're back in the gym, the weights, the benches, the bars, everything is wiped down probably once an hour, with all different types of disinfectants. The places then we have a private cleaning company come in like pretty much Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So Wednesday they have off, because Wednesday usually is like Tuesday night is usually our least busiest day. But I mean, they're bleaching the floors, they're bleaching the counters, like, and then they're doing all the hospital grade stuff. It's ridiculous, but like, it gives people a peace of mind that we're doing our best on our end to prevent it from coming into our gym. Granted, we had a couple scares and stuff like that, but everyone got tested and everyone came back negative. Life went on. When that happens, thank God all of our clients are, so diligent. They call us like, hey, supposedly my kid was in contact with another child. They're not going to come in. No problem. Don't worry about it. You're not getting charged for it. It's a pandemic. Like, there's a 24-hour cancellation policy with us. But when it comes to COVID, like, you just can't take that chance. And why are you going to annoy a client just to get that extra buck. Like you always want to retain someone with that kind of stuff. So, you know, obviously we try to make, you know, make the best of the situation possible. And, you know, it's definitely been hard to obviously bounce back from losing a lot of revenue, but I mean, we're on track to probably make almost the exact same amount of money as we did last year, as long as we just buckle down for the next 2 months. It is possible. So that's kind of our goal.
So Nick, couple questions. One, your description of two things. One, the way you were driving through that part of the country as somebody who hasn't lived there in the last 10 years and been mostly in the South, I had a nightmare right there. I actually had like conniptions. That's insane, man. Good for you to be able to stick that out. And then number two, being able to kind of go and meet your clients is awesome. And showing that dedication is something that a lot of people don't have with the different jobs they have, right? They can sit back, they can send more emails and do things like that. Were you able to rely on technology at all and find some success in that or do other things?
So, yeah. So obviously the people I couldn't train in person, because some people live in the city, some people live too far and they just didn't want me coming over. Totally understandable. FaceTime a lot, you know, so I had probably a handful of people that it was a couple days a week that I would block off just for FaceTimes. And then a handful of people, I was actually using an online platform called Trainerize for a while. It was a very, you know, very basic platform. Eventually we turned over to a Team Builder, a little bit more advanced, a lot better of an interface for us, especially for what we're looking at. Cause you know, Craig and I are always looking at, you know, data analytics. Like if someone says, hey, what did I do, you know, 2 weeks ago on bench press, like we can pull it up. And that's why we liked this software better. And a lot of our clients are still using it because there's probably a handful throughout the entire gym that are still online based because they're just are fearful of coming in. You know, for that particular thing, I usually look at their programs once a week and just kind of assess, okay, like this is what they progressed in, this is what they stayed the same. And I just write quick little notes to them. They don't respond to it. I'll usually just copy and paste and text message them just so they know that I'm on top of them. And I'm not just kind of giving them a program like, all right, good luck, have fun, I'll see you in a month. You know, we charge for that too. I think we're charging about $200 a month for, you know, personal training programs. Like everything that I do for, you know, my client Debbie is going to be different from my client Wyatt. So it's obviously a lot more stuff to keep track of, but I'm still retaining that client. And whenever they come back in, I know they're going to come back to me. And that definitely has really helped just our business in general, because, you know, even now when people go away, you know, a couple of them have started to go away just to see, you know, kind of feel it out if they can go away for the holidays, they're FaceTiming us. So at least it's still being used now. It's not just, you know, once the gym is open, FaceTime's out the door. FaceTime still could be used. It's just another way, again, for us to continue to grow our business in another direction.
So how do you see that growing as you move forward? Is that something, are you still going to block that 30, 45 an hour time every day to do your FaceTime check-ins and workouts, or is that something you're going to kind of phase out slowly?
So right now, like I have like probably two or three FaceTimes, and then the other stuff that I'm just training them, you know, and just monitoring their training programs, I'll continue to do that. If they want to do stuff on top of, you know, once they start coming back in, if they want to start doing stuff on top of, you know, their training program in the gym, I can write stuff for them to do outside. You know, obviously it's going to be an additional cost, but you know, for them, again, they're paying a premium because they want to continue to train. I'm not at all opposed to doing the FaceTimes. Obviously it's a little harder for me just because I'm constantly on the floor. So sometimes I'll like rush to get off the floor after I stretch someone and get on the FaceTime call. But for the most part, I actually got most of my people back in. I have like two or three that are not in right now. And again, they're just FaceTiming. But, you know, I really try to make it a point like, hey, I'm doing my due diligence of cleaning up. I socially distance myself, but I socially distance everyone else in the gym from us. So like what I kind of am strategic about, and it makes my clients feel more comfortable, is I kind of take like a corner of the gym. Like I know, like I need a rack. I know I need a TRX. I know I need some dumbbells. I'll be in that corner for that hour. You know, the next client that comes in, hey, I know I'm going to be on the turf the whole time. All right, then I'm going on the turf. So I always try to say like, hey, I always talk to all my coworkers and even my boss. I'm like, what do you guys need in your lift right now? Because then at least I can kind of move stuff around and make sure that my clients feel like they're safe, in the sense of like, you know, they're not on top of one another.
So do you think this has made you a better coach now that you've had to learn different ways to kind of train people and do things?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's made me more strategic. Like I've opened my mind and thinking outside of the box now. Cause it's not, you know, some people don't have equipment at home. Like, so what am I going to do? I'm going to start working on more tempo work. I'm going to start doing more ISO holds, all that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of them bought bands and stuff like that. So obviously you can do so much with bands. You know, some only have one of my guys had a pair of 10-pound dumbbells. That's all he had. I used to give him the workouts of his life with 10-pound dumbbells, like push-ups, you know, floor press, you know, the glute bridge with a floor press, anything you name it, I would think of. And I would literally do this stuff in my home or in the gym and do it with him just so he can see I was doing it and showing him how to do it. And I was like, wow, I'm like, if you really just start kind of thinking just into finite details, you can change a training stimulus completely.
So there's a great lesson to be had. I know it's something when we were at Hofstra together, we used to talk about all the time, because when we were at UConn, we had the mausoleums of strength and conditioning. We had the biggest facilities. We had the nicest equipment. It was all brand new. Your time at UConn, we literally redid the field house where you spent most of your time. We built Shankman, which was this massive facility, kind of the first, you know, mausoleum of strength in the collegiate space. And then we were at Hofstra where, again, we had resources, but we went from 5,000 and 40,000 square feet to 3,000 and 2,500 square feet. We went from top of the line equipment to equipment that needed to be replaced, but we didn't have the budget. So we used to always talk about adjusting to your resource level, because if you can only be good, and you know, strength and conditioning is our context. If you can only be good as a strength coach with all the bells and whistles, if you can only train with Elanco bars, shout out to Elanco, you know, versus being able to get done, hey, you only have 10-pound dumbbells. How can you accomplish to the best of your ability? The goal with that is, you know, it's mastery of your skill set. So I would argue to you, Nick, that not only do you have better mastery of being a coach because you're able to adapt and adjust your resource level, but you have better mastery of the entire, all the dynamics in your part of the profession, which is the, you know, pay for training. You know, when I was a strength coach in college, I got paid to work. Who showed up is who I trained, versus for you, there's the client engagement, there's the money side. Like you said, the 24-hour policy makes a lot of sense. And there's other people we've talked to, and I'm sure there'll be in the future, where you have to have that because the time is valuable. Whereas for you guys, you had to sacrifice that for the customer relationship dynamic. Big shout out to Team Builder. I texted, so former athlete from Kansas, Caroline Jarmach, Director of International Sales for Hyper Ice, and Hewitt Tomlin, CEO of Team Builder. I actually texted both of them together to connect them the other day. So right now, you just reference it. I pull up a text message, I take a screenshot, and I text Hewitt and say, hey, shout out to Team Builder on the podcast tonight. So Hewitt, whenever you see this, I'm sure I'll send it to you too. You know, sponsorship, baby. That's just, I say that because Hewitt's a good guy. And again, if anyone knows Hewitt, huge positive influence in the industry. So always easy to shout out a good guy who's doing a good thing. My question though, Nick, for you is, how did you, one, have the business mind? Because, you know, on paper, right? You're like me and Matt. On paper, your degrees are in strength and conditioning. You're a strength coach. You're a rep counter and a 135 is 45 plus 45 plus 45 kind of intelligent guy. So you obviously have a business mind, right? You're not the second in command of a very successful business because you have no business savvy. So how'd you get your business mind? And then how has the last 6 months changed your business mindset moving forward?
All right. So Craig, my boss, has been doing this, you know, for 25 somewhat years or something like that at this point. He you know, he played ball for University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, got hurt, decided he was done with his football career, came home to Southern. And then from Southern, you know, he graduated and started working at Gold's Gym. He was making, I think you said like $6 an hour or something like that. He just climbed the totem pole there. After, you know, he couldn't go any higher, went somewhere else. Then he went to New York Sports Club, became number one trainer at New York Sports Club for X amount of years. Kind of got to the cat and he's like, you know what? Need to go out on my own. Started training people at their houses. And it became more of a word of mouth for him. You know, he was training Tommy Hilfiger. Like, he was training some really high-end people, Allen Houston. And then from there, he's like, all right, I'm starting to make some money. I'm going to open up a facility. So he actually opened up a place down in Stanford on the water, kind of like on the Greenwich-Stanford line. And it was all Cybex machines. That's all he had in there. So like it was a foreclosed place, I think it was. And he bought it for cheap and just started training people off Cybex machines. From there, I mean, he started making a lot of relationships with just random people from word of mouth. Like, you know, it would be like his client, Abby, was like, hey, Jeffrey, come here. And like, then Jeffrey started training, having both his sons train. His sons are my age. Then all of his son's friends started training with Craig. So he started building a business that way. Then he realized a lot of these people were from more of the Greenwich area. So he closed up shop there, moved to Greenwich. And then he opened up C4, which is actually right down the block from where I am now, Joe. Built kind of like a small little empire there. And then he's like, you know what, place is too small. Got to, you know, open up a bigger one. So then he opened up Combine, I think back in 2011. And, you know, from what he showed me over the, you know, I've, you know, obviously learning about his history and always talking to him, like, you know, if we're off, like I'm just in the office, just shooting the shit with him. We're constantly talking about different things, not only just training, but life too. And, you know, he said, he's like, listen, he's like, I've made so many mistakes in this business. You know, have I overtrained people? Yes. He's like, did I burn bridges with people? Yes. He's like, but you take that on the chin and you learn from it. And you know, when he's like, you're going to start seeing like, okay, like these people might take advantage of you. You know, like, hey, they're going to cancel on you last minute. Hey, something came up. Can you not charge me and I'll come in later. He's like, you have to make your judgment of that. So that's where I started learning, okay, like, you know, what's reasonable, what's not. And that was my first lesson from him is, you know, one client would always cancel on me. He's no longer with me. But he would literally cancel on me like 10 minutes before. And I charged him and I was like, you know, you're wasting my hour. And like, you know, at that point I really wasn't making a lot of money. So I obviously was trying to make whatever I could. P.S. He got pissed at me. So I had to have a talk with him. And, you know, I said, listen, there's a 24-hour cancellation policy. If you're going to continuously do this, like, why don't we, instead of having reoccurring appointments, why don't we just go day by day? I have no problem trying to throw you in whenever I can. If I'm not busy, you're in. No problem. So I was able to retain the client because of that, instead of just, you know, burning the bridge and then he was going to the gym down the road. And from there, I started kind of learning, okay, like, you know, the clients that you take care of, they're going to take care of you kind of thing. And so, you know, obviously you have to make exceptions to the rule. Like if someone cancels on you at 9 o'clock at night, but they have a 9 a.m. session, you're not charging them. It's just an understandable thing. If they're canceling you at 12 o'clock at night, I'm in bed, like ready to get up in 3 hours for my day. That I have to charge you for, but it's got to be a mutual understanding. Like it's all based on judgment and it has to be, you know, that everyone, they have to understand like your time is valuable too, not just their money. So that was kind of my first lesson of that. And then over time I said to Craig, I was like, all right, like what do I do to obviously, you know, grow here? And he's like, just keep having your face here. And this is probably now, at that point, 6 months into me working there, I started literally just getting up, even if I didn't have to be in there until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, I'd get up at 5 and just go to work. And I would literally sit at the front desk. I'd say good morning to everyone. I would, you know, obviously, you know, do clean up any of the weights. I would do the laundry because we, you know, provide towels and we do have showers there. Just to show that I was constantly trying to be busy. And if I wasn't on the floor and I was behind the front desk, I was programming. And it was just, you know, all these different types of programs that, like, you know, Joe, you taught me. And then I would try to modify stuff and just put my own twist on it. And then I would go train on the floor and these clients would be, you know, looking at me, seeing what I was doing. And then next thing I know, hey, do you have time to train my kid? Hey, do you have time to train my kid? Hey, do you have time? And then also it's like, hey, do you have time to train my friends? I'm like, okay. So then it started kind of picking up. And then I was like, okay, like if they're asking me now, I'm going to start kind of picking at them. Hey, you know, I know you're only coming in once a week. Like, you know, I think honestly two times a week would be more beneficial. Like, you know, you're not going to get as much of a training stimulus if you're only doing one time a week. I'm like, oh, okay, so two times a week now. So now my clientele is starting to increase. My hours are starting to increase.
So,
and then I was like, hey,
sorry to interrupt you. Let me throw one thing in there.
Yeah.
Asking, right? So in business, you know, asking for the sale, you know, and what you're talking about, it's asking for the commitment. I think there's a huge emphasis on anything you're doing related to people. And there's a transaction there, right? Like you're trying to generate your business, your portfolio of people, you know, you have to ask. And I think that's just the reason I stopped here is it's something that came up in my business today with some of the people who I work with. And I was like, but you never asked. And, you know, I got that funny look. I'm like, what'd you expect? You never asked, like, for them to read your mind. So just to make a big point of that, because it's something that's reoccurred 3 or 4 times in my day to day, is you always have to ask. And for you, let's get back into your story. That was asking people, do you have more time? Do you have more? Can you get me someone? So keep going.
Yeah. So from there, it was like, you know, 2 days a week. Hey, you want to bump it to 3? Do you have time? I have, you know, this day available at these times. They know, like, you know, you're kind of busy in the morning when you drop off the kids. Yeah, no problem. That sounds like a great idea. And all of a sudden now they're 3 days a week. And, you know, most of these adults that I train are, you know, 2, 3, 4 days a week. So now my morning is starting to fill up. And then, you know, their kids are starting to fill up my afternoon. And then I was like, okay, well, this is good. And, you know, a couple people would start coming in just to see what the facility was like. Guess who was at the front desk? I was. So I was the one that was introducing myself. I was the one that was pretty much, you know, giving them my punchline of, here at Comp Training, this is what we do. This is our facility. We, you know, we have 4,500 square feet. We have a 25 person triathlon team in here. We have a 20 yard turf. We have 3 power racks. We have dumbbells go from 5 to 100 pounds. So I ask you, what are you interested in getting accomplished? Why did you come in? And then they'll talk. And then, you know, from there I was like, okay, so our first session, would be an initial assessment. So I'm going to kind of look at how you move with all your body weight, exercises. And I want to see if you have any imbalances or compensations. From there, I'm going to, you know, recommend this is what we need to do. And this is how I'm going to, build your program around you. So from there, just saying, I'm going to build a program around you, it catches people because now you're saying that it's only designed for that person. And those are the buzzwords people want to hear. And then, you know, when I would talk to parents, like the big buzzwords are, we're going to decrease the risk of injury for your kid. And, you know, Joe, you're a parent. Like, obviously, if your daughter, your son, whenever they're of age to go into training facility, you're going to want to know that they're going to be safe. Like, you're not going to want to know that, you know, you got a guy that's going to be like, all right, we're going to deadlift on day one. No, like, we're going to learn how to just walk properly first and then, you know, figure out, you know, what's the next progression from there. And those are the things that, you know, especially the parents want to hear. They want to know that, hey, my kid's going to be safe with these guys. And we're going to head in the right direction and set them up for success in their future.
What do you mean? Having a plan is important?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, that's definitely been, you know, I've seen other people train, like not just, you know, personal trainers, but even other coaches that are in the private sector, you know, not all of them have, you know, these set out plans of what they're going to do, progressions and regressions. I think that's very vital, because if someone comes back to you and goes, hey, what did we do last week? And you're like, they're going to call bullshit on you. So, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, you better walk the walk too. Like it's got to all be, you know, kind of in line and kosher.
Yeah, so I love the fact that you're taking very important pieces and putting into your coaching. It sounds like you work a lot with high school athletes, kids, a lot of youth athletes, which is awesome. And something that a lot of personal trainers struggle with, and I've seen a lot of great strength coaches in the college level also, you know, struggle with it, is the ability to regress. And I think that's what makes the difference between a good strength coach or an athletic trainer or whatever, or physical therapist, and an average one, is the ability to actually regress, right? Anybody can progress. You can add weight, you can add tempo, you can add any sort of stimulus you want, but being able to take those away and still make meaningful progress in an intelligent way is something that a lot of people miss the boat on. So now that you've kind of created your own style, you've gotten a good group going, what is the next step for you? How do you take your business, you know, whether it's working where you are now or starting your own facility, what is the next step for you?
So honestly, my goal is to own Combine one day. Like that's, you know, I've talked to Craig about it before. Like at some point or another, you know, he's going to be 50 next year. I'm going to be 30 next year. And, you know, he's not going to do this for the rest of his life, but obviously he still wants to be involved in it. And I said to him, like, listen, I want to be the boss here. And I said it straight up to him, probably I want to say the second year I was there. I'm into my fifth year now. Like, I was like, I'm going to run this place one day. And I said, I'll promise that I'll hire your son when he's of age, but I'm like, I would like to be the boss. And he's like, all right. He's like, then prove it. So every week, you know, I am, you know, we're in there pretty much at the same time. I'm leaving there later than him. I will go above and beyond and outwork him, even though he tries to have a competition with me. But I just want to show him that I can do this. And, you know, I'll kind of give you a story. Joe knows a little bit about this.
I was just going to ask you this, and you know, how much you want to share obviously is up to you, but
I could share it. So it was last year. Craig almost died, actually. So he got into a severe bike crash. He's a very big competitive Ironman racer. And he was actually up in Ironman 7030 up in Connecticut, which is not too far from Joe. And this particular course used to be run by Rev3, which is just another company. And then Ironman bought it out for their rights. But this particular course, there's part of it that is like kind of sketchy when on a couple turns and some descents. Road is kind of crappy, like, kind, you know, back not road, perfectly paved.
Yeah, back road, yeah. Not well taken care of, not farm town, but kind of farmish rural area.
Yeah, so a lot of people at this particular part crash just because it's, I don't even know the gradient, but you're going so freaking fast. If you don't know how to like lean into it and turn, you're coming right off the bike, or you're just sliding out from underneath you. And it happens every year. A lot of people just get road rash, you know, maybe a broken arm, something like that. Nothing crazy. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for Craig. So from what he remembers is they don't close off this particular course, Matt. It's kind of like the cars yield to the pedestrians, but like, you know, they try to stay off the course as much as they can. And they're held on Sundays. So he's coming down this descent. He's done this particular race before, God knows how many times. And a garbage truck's coming at him. So he tries to, you know, get out of the way of the garbage truck. And he sees a guy in the middle of the road laying there. And he's holding his collarbone. He's screaming because he broke his collarbone. So he now has to avoid this guy. So he avoids the garbage truck and the guy to not get killed by a truck or kill the guy because he's going about 40 miles an hour, loses control and goes head face first into a metal guardrail. Yeah. So all this is happening, by the way, and the gym is like cranking that day. Like, we are so busy. And I get a phone call. They're like, oh, hey, Craig got hurt. Like, you know, just, you know, make sure everything's going well. I'm like, all right, no problem. Like, knowing Craig, I'm like, yeah, it's probably road rash. He probably fell. Maybe messed up his arm, but nothing like out of, you know, that he couldn't deal with. Little do I know, he's in medvac to Waterbury Hospital, right, Joe?
Yep.
Is that where Rachel is?
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel is on the scene there. So, which we talked about a couple weeks later after this whole thing happened. He's mangled. Like, his face was completely lacerated. He broke his jaw in two places. He crushed his skull. He broke his scapula. He broke 11 ribs on one side. And he crushed his vertebral artery in his neck. So, yeah, I mean, everything that could have possibly happened to this guy did, besides breaking his neck. And of like, thank God he didn't, or and die for that matter. But so, you know, he then gets rushed to Yale New Haven. They do all the emergency surgeries. You know, he's on a ventilator and all that stuff because he couldn't breathe on his own he had a collapsed lung and a punctured lung. So let's add that one to the list too. So he's now about, you know, a week into it. And I talked to his wife once, who's also my boss. And she's like, you need to take care of everything. I'm like, okay. And I was like, what do I need to do? And she's like, you need to do this, 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 and that. And like, she just write me a list of stuff. I would do it. And, you know, she's like, you're writing checks now. You're going to do this. You're going to do this. You need to go deposit the money at the bank. You need to, write the check for rent. You need to make sure that these people are still getting in. You need to make these phone calls. I'm like, all right, I got it. And then, you know, a week goes by, you know, she's still really busy. You know, text her, hey, everything okay? What do you need me to do? She goes, just keep out what you're doing. And kind of from there, I was like, all right, I guess I'm the boss now. So everyone would keep coming to me. What's going on with Craig? So, you know, I would give him a little bit of an update. And then, you know, all of his clients kind of just fell off, you know, off the mat because they didn't want to train without him. So then it was my job to then email them like, hey, we still really want you to come in. You know that Craig is out right now. You know, we don't know how long it's going to be, but we really want you to come back in and train. Like, we will take care of it for you guys. We're, you know, on track of what we need to do with where you guys left off from your previous training session. And we'll accommodate you the best we can. I probably got 90% of his clients back. Some of them were a little, you know, queasy about it, which is fine. You know, creatures of habit. But everyone really came together as a whole and understood, like, this was the situation at hand and we are going to get through this together. And, you know, I took the reins for that. And he eventually came back. He had to, you know, come back slow and stuff like that. He was in a neck brace for like 2 months. Couldn't open his jaw. Like, he was messed up for a little while. I mean, now the crazy guy is training outside on a brand new bike, you know, riding, you know, 30 miles an hour downhills, could care less. And, you know, he's ready to compete again when Ironman's allowed to come back after COVID. You know, he's like, I'm not stopping. He's like, you know, the doctor told me, he's like, I have any chance of dying like any of these other guys out here. So why am I going to stop? And that's where I was like, okay, if he can do this, I can do this. Like, if he's going to grind like this, I'm going to grind like this and just prove to him like that I can run this for him. And, you know, Christmas comes around, you know, he writes me this long letter just of like, you know, and I actually read it today, which is kind of interesting. And it just said like, you know, everything's going to be tough in your life, but, you know, no one's going to always be there to pat you on the back and say, good job. Like, it's your job to build your destiny. At the end of the day, like, it's, you know, the person that's looking back at you in the mirror, that's who's going to control your life. And that's who's going to make your life, you know, either successful or not. Either you win or you don't. And that's always how he puts it.
I didn't mean to cut you off. My apologies.
Yeah.
So after that terrible situation, right, you got thrust into this role. What did you learn? So what did you change about what you were doing as the assistant director, right? Or the top guy, top assistant to being the guy in charge? What was the biggest takeaway you can bring home to kind of build on for later?
For me, it's really just accommodating people. Like, you know, if they needed certain times, like I was doing anything in my power to try to, you know, move around the schedule, not obviously piss people off, like, hey, like, I still want to try to get these people in for Craig. Are you able to move stuff around your schedule? If not, no big deal. We can train with someone else. And a lot of people were very happy with the fact that, like, I was asking permission. I wasn't just like, hey, I need you to move now, like, and just think that they were going to be cool with it. You know, it was really just explaining everything. Like, this is what's going on. Can you help me out? You know, I'm going to do whatever I can to keep it convenient for you. And again, like I did everything I could to just make sure people were comfortable coming back and training without Craig.
I was going to say, so now that you've done that, right, you brought them all back. What would you, if you go back, what would you change? What would you add? What would you make Combine into? Like, what do you see it in a few years when he decides, hey, I'm ready to retire? Because nobody wants to be a strength coach who dies on the floor, right? Spotting somebody doing better. No, I'm good. I'd much rather go enjoy my life. What would you change or add or subtract?
I'd probably add another coach, honestly. That's about it. Like, I mean, the guys that we had working for at the time, we, you know, were all on board. They're all great guys. I mean, sometimes they would be burnt out and be like, listen, the light is at the end of the tunnel. Like, this is the goal right now. I'm like, it's not about just the individual at this point. Like, it's about keeping Combine alive. Like, because the minute we stop working, this place is going under and then we're all jobless. And to me, that was the biggest thing. Like, you know, besides the house that I live in right now, you know, Combine's my home. Like, I told Craig, I'm like, can you just buy a mattress? Cause I might as well sleep here. I mean, I'm there the longest out of all the guys, but like, I take pride every day walking in there because it's not a job to me. Like, it's so much fun. Like, and people are like, how do you work 7 days a week? I'm like, cause it's not work. Like, the minute it's work, then it shouldn't, like, I shouldn't be here anymore. But like, I love being there. Like, I genuinely like, you know, coming in, seeing the same exact faces and just ready to get to work. That's just what I do. And that's just how I've been ever since I was little with, you know, with swimming and stuff like that. Like, I know this is what needs to get done today. And I'm ready to do whatever it is that I have to do to get it done.
So there's something big you hit on there, and we're talking, you know, how you got to the role and the business mindedness. And again, just being due to Craig's accident, you're the business guy now. But I think you hit on something really critical of talking to the people you worked with and saying, you know, it's bigger than us. And that, what's your leadership philosophy and how has your management leadership toolbox grown because of that? You know, you made the comment, guys, if we're not in this together, one, the business dies, and two, we don't have jobs. To me, that's a management capacity, management capital moment where you step up and you're trying to bring the team together as a coach, but it's not the team of people you're coaching, it's the team of people you work with as a manager. So, you know, again, I ask the second time as I've, you know, interrupted myself, what's your management leadership philosophy and how has it grown?
Obviously, like I'm the oldest guy there now at this point. There were people that were there before me. They've all gone on to other things. You know, being there for the longest amount of time now, like I always will talk to them about like, listen, this is what, you know, in my second year, like this is what happened and this is what I've learned from, you know. Have I made mistakes before? Yeah, but like this is how I've learned from them. Like Craig has made multiple mistakes. I made multiple mistakes. You're going to make multiple mistakes. Learn from them. Don't let them continuously happen. That was like one of the first things I talked to one of my recent guys that we hired back in November. He was just asking me like a question. He's like, hey, like, you know, this client of mine, you know, he can't sell me 3 days in a row. Like, and then he just can't sell me again. So that's the fourth time. What do I do? I'm like, you know, what was his excuse? And like, you know, I play devil's advocate because obviously, yes, I want the kid to get paid. Cause he, you know, he's obviously blocking off these hours for this guy. And he's like, you know, he said he's busy with work, you know, the kids and all that stuff. I'm like, throw him a bone. And I was like, cause think about this. If this guy is spending probably $8,000-$9,000 a package, because that's like the biggest package we have, I was like, why are you going to piss him off and say, all right, like, you know, fuck you. I'm going to go down the block to, you know, Joe Schmo and train for cheaper. And he's not going to charge me whenever I have to cancel. I was like, think about, you know, the people and like how much money they bring into this place. Not just because they're good people and stuff like that, but you also want their recommendation to other people to come back here and give us a good reputation, because that's going to bring in new clients. And those new clients are going to probably have kids, and those new kids are going to, what is going to, you know, bring in the next wave of athletes, while, you know, my athletes now are all seniors, like they're gone. So now I'm looking at, okay, how do I get the next wave of middle school athletes to become my high school athletes again? And that's what I always will tell them. I'm like, you know, where is so-and-so? Like, I keep tabs on a lot of people just because that's just who I am. I always will say, like, why isn't this person in your schedule? And they're like, oh, like, you know, they went away. It's like, all right, email them. I'm like, get them back in here. And I was like, you guys need to have a sense of urgency. And this is where, you know, Emily comes in. There has to be a sense of urgency. If there's not a sense of urgency, why are you working for us? Why are you working here? Because we're here to, you know, obviously supply a certain type of training, you know, that's far superior than anyone else's. You know, if you're not going to give it your all, you should not be here. And I've said that multiple times to a couple of the guys. And, you know, the first time I think I scared someone, but like the second time they're like, holy shit, you're right. You know, it's again, like, and what I just said before, it's not just about you. It's about the whole gym. You do well, the gym does well, you get paid more. Like, that's just how it goes. And, you know, it's all teamwork at that point.
Shout out to Emily Schilling, formerly Emily Esselman, assistant strength coach at Hofstra when Nick and I were there. That's the Emily he was referencing before. I'm sure we'll talk to her at some point. So, Em, whenever you see this, because I know you will, love you.
Yesel stud.
Yep.
Man, with all the things he's talking about, man, we haven't had a whole lot of personal trainers on here, so kind of a bunch of different ways we can go. I guess my biggest thing is this: when you are transitioning, let's say at some point, Nick, and you want to grow your family, right? So you're newly married, you guys are trying to buy a house, you guys are trying to take that next step from a personal standpoint. What are you going to do as far as your time goes, right? Because once you have that first kid, or, you know, you decide you want to put more time into your family or whatever, you're not going to be able to do that 80, 90, 100 hours a week that we're all so used to. Or if you do, other things are going to lag. So what's kind of your plan long-term from that standpoint?
So actually, I might as well say it now. My wife is actually pregnant. So
I feel like I jinxed you or blessed you, depending upon how you want to look at it.
And he referenced earlier, they didn't get a house. He's actually in the house he bought. So
yeah,
second house happened.
Congratulations. Yeah.
So thank you. So actually, so going back to that whole thing, it was pretty much, we lost the house in March. We moved in with my parents. A couple weeks later, I'm like, Katie, I got to get rid of my car. And I was like, my car lease is almost done. And she's like, oh, what are you going to do? I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to buy a certified used car, you know, get an SUV that'll have, you know, enough room to carry around the equipment. I'm like, I don't know how long it'll be. Buy the car. House comes up on Zillow. It's, you know, within the price range. I'm like, yeah, let's just go look at it, Katie. And she goes, no, it's kind of small. I'm like, just relax. Let's go look at it. It's in the exact same neighborhood where we want to be in New Canaan. So drive up to the house, go into my corner unit. It was perfect. It's a townhouse. We were looking at other houses and stuff like that are just out of our range. So a townhouse is just easier for us right now. And so we go in and I'm looking around. I'm like, this is the house. And Katie's like, oh, I really like this house. So we look around and I go walk downstairs. Katie's still up here on the top floor. Go to my realtor. I'm like, how much do they want? And she's like, oh, this is what they want. I'm like, all right, like we're buying the house today. And Katie's like, you just bought a car. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm buying the house. Like this is like, I've been working my ass off for 5 years and living my American dream to buy a house for my wife and me. And, you know, it's one thing that like I've never stopped working at doing is like I said to Katie, I'm like, the day I married her, I'm like, I will give you everything I possibly can. And then obviously, now, a couple months into being in the house, Katie's pregnant, which is awesome. And, now obviously this is, the next chapter. So I have until June to work as much as I possibly can. from there, I mean, I'm going to have to probably curtail it a little bit. I'll probably start not staying until 9 o'clock at night on the weekdays. Probably try to cut it out at 7:30, 8, just to give her some relief. But, my goal is to obviously, one, to take the next step and, get another raise, hopefully. And that would possibly supply her to not have to work anymore and to just take care of the kid. Because, to me, yes, having a babysitter or a nanny would be great to give some relief, but I want us to raise the kid. My parents are the same way. My dad went to work, my mom stayed home and raised, me and my sisters. Same thing with Katie's parents. Her dad worked and her mom stayed home. Like, she wants to be a mother, and I want her to give her that opportunity. So if that means, yes, I still need to work, 7 days a week for right now, then fine. Eventually, it took Craig probably 6-7 years to not work Saturdays, but so he doesn't work Saturdays anymore, and he gets out of there at a relatively decent time, usually 5:30, 6 o'clock every weekday. On Fridays, he's out like midday. But we always talked about it, and I was like, when do you know is the appropriate time? He's like, right when the kids start walking and they start playing sports, he's like, that's your cue. He's like, go and be a dad. And he's like, I don't want to miss that kind of stuff. He's like, obviously, yes, want to see them be a baby to, a toddler and up. But he's like, the biggest joy I get is seeing, his two sons and his daughter play hockey and play lacrosse. Like, that's like the biggest thrill to him. The other day, he's like, hey, I need you to take three of these clients. He's like, I'm going to watch hockey. Like, could care less anymore. He's like, listen, I made my money. He's like, I know I'm, set from, with my retirement, with their college and stuff like that. I want to go watch my kids grow now. And that's kind of the same trajectory I want to be on, is because, he's done this for so long and he's taught me so much so far. And there's obviously definitely more to come. But, I want that opportunity to still, keep grinding away. And then when it's time for, me to be more of, that father figure and take them to their, if it's a girl, their dance recitals or their sports, or, the boys, their sports or whatever, I want to be able to do that. I don't want to have to curtail it now and then kick myself in the ass later that I'm like, shit, well, I don't have enough money to send them to this. Yeah. I just want to have all that stuff like ready. I'm very big in planning.
Well, yeah. Planning is awesome. And I think that's a huge part of this podcast. And a lot of what we talk about on here is people like yourself who are at that awesome transition point where you are doing awesome, right? You're crushing it. You're the first guy in line. But now it becomes, all right, so Nick, what are you going to do for systems and processes, right, to get yourself to that next level? What are you going to do to make that passive income, or at least, less time for money? So what is your transition going to be? So, and that's not a question you have to answer now, but that's something that the people listening are probably thinking right now too. Hey, I'm in the same, I'm crushing it right now. I'm doing awesome. I'm 30 years old. got my first kid on the way. Like, this is exactly who we're talking about when we do this thing. And that's exactly who Joe and I thought of. It was me a few years ago when I had my 3-year-old or almost 4-year-old. It was him when he had his first kid 6 years ago.
Four going on 40, because going on 15, yeah, depending on which day you talk.
So this is exactly that time in your life, though, where you need to stop doing, you know, not immediately, but something you need to think about long term is, how am I going to trade something besides time for money? Is it going to be some sort of product, some sort of programming, some sort of, you know, whatever it is for you, and however you can do that with the gym? Those FaceTime ideas are awesome. How can you make that more of a system and a process? Those calls you were doing, the ability to go get those clients, and maybe do more group classes once all these bans are lifted and all that crap. But I guess my question is, do you have anything in mind that you want to build from here, or places you see yourself going?
So, I mean, probably within the next couple of years, you know, once I actually build my nest egg back up from buying this house, I definitely want to probably start sitting down and seeing what can I do to start owning a piece of this, of the gym. And then from there, like, you know, obviously I want to have, I still have input now as, you know, not even being an owner, but, you know, kind of giving my input to Craig and saying, like, okay, this is the direction I think we should go in. Like, these are the people that I think we should go after now. Like, you know, we were talking about the other day, I'm like, we should go after rowing. I'm like, no one is training rowing right now. All they do is literally are on the erg all the time. Guess what? Craig makes a phone call. We get the rowing team in, and they're going to start training in, I think, the next month. You know, because they need a facility to train at. So they're going to bring a couple ergs in. They're going to, you know, they have like a blocked off section of the gym. They're in for a couple hours a day, and then we get to train them, you know, in the weight room, which is great. You know, eventually, you know, we do want to open up another facility, probably up in New Canaan. So, you know, kind of like, this is all obviously up in the air. It's nothing definite, but he would probably come up here in New Canaan where we live, and he would try to run this, and it would probably be a smaller facility than the one that we have now. And I'd be running the Greenwich one. And then from there, like, you know, I'd be the boss there, he'd be the boss up here. And then we'd obviously, you know, collaborate on what is going on between each other's facilities. You know, does this need to be repaired? Do we need more equipment, all that kind of stuff? So that's probably the next step within the next couple of years. I mean, right now, like, again, he just, you know, he always told me, he's like, Nick, he's like, this is the time to work. He's like, you know, he's like, you're young. He's like, this is the time to work. He's like, because at some point or another, like you were just saying, you need to kind of take a step back slightly. I mean, I'm never gonna have my foot out the door. I never will until the day I say I'm done here. You know, I'll always be 2 feet in, and probably, you know, all the way in to the back of, you know, there's nowhere near the door for me. But yeah, so that's what I think is kind of my goal in the next couple of years. So, but we'll see. I mean, obviously this, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. So let me go back to something you said. We're switching gears a little bit, right? So, I got one more question, then we're going to transition to, like most people in this kind of space, we have 3 questions we always ask everybody. That way we can kind of compare all the answers and, you know, who says what, and what's a common theme, right? Like, one of the common themes, even from the podcast we did before you were on today, because, you know, again, trying to find balance, right? We both have kids, we mm-hmm. both have work. So we're scheduling these back to back later at night, right? So there's a lot of common themes between the people. Failing upwards and finding balance doesn't mean being balanced. It means being balanced to then eventually be balanced where you want to be. So again, I thought great point you made. There's something though you said about money. So you talked about savings and a nest egg. And then even before that, you talked about when you bought the house, you talked about it being within your price range. And, you know, I believe that, you know, you go visit the place, you check it out, you're able to turn around your interstate and say, we can do this, let's go. You can pull the trigger because, you know, and go into this. What was your strategy on managing your money, you know, saving, you know, what's your philosophy on that? Are you, by the sound of it, you're a very saver kind of person. You're not a blow your money on, you know, bullshit and, you know, whatever. So what's your thoughts there? What's your advice to people doing what you do and approaching the money side of you as a person and not just the money side of the business, like we talked about before with paying rent, paying this, you know, keeping people in the door for cash flow?
Yeah. So yes, definitely conservative. Just, you know, I always will make sure that I, you know, have X amount of dollars in my savings account, X amount of dollars in my checking account every month. That's how I am. I need to know that if something happens, I'm going to be fine. Katie's going to be fine. Bentley's going to be fine. Who's sitting outside the door crying at me right now.
Dog, by the way, not a kid. It's a dog.
The best yellow lab you'll ever meet in your life. So actually shout out to my client, Brett, who he owns a hedge fund. A lot of the adults that I work with are, you know, in finance and stuff like that. This guy in particular, I met probably 2 years ago. He's 54 now. This guy is literally my best friend. You know, he's taught me a lot about just how to save money, you know, investing and stuff like that. But like, he knew like what my goals were within the past year or so, like with buying this house. He's like, just keep stocking it away. And I will recommend one book. It's called The Millionaire Next Door. And it's a phenomenal book. You can get it pretty much on anywhere. And it pretty much teaches you how to, you know, live below your means. So it's not like, you know, you're going to be a stingy guy or like, you know, be cheap and like, you know, you're going to buy, you know, the crappy piece of filet when you want to go get the piece of Angus, like not like that kind of stuff. It's more of like, all right, do you need a BMW or a Bentley right now? No, you can go get a Honda that still does exactly the same thing, but it's just not that price tag or that logo on it. Like, what's the point? So in the book, it talks about, you know, a couple different people. And there's one particular couple that the guy, I think he was like a fireman. He was making like $65,000-$75,000 a year. Great. Woman was a secretary. She was making like 40 grand. But the way they were investing and saving their money, they had like millions upon millions of dollars saved. And they were, you know, they lived in a modest house. You know, they drove modest cars and, you know, they went on one nice vacation a year. They weren't buying, you know, $500 sneakers, you know, going on Amazon and maxing out credit cards and stuff like that. They lived, you know, below their means in the respect of like, okay, this is what I need to live. This is, you know, I can get a couple more things on top of it. And this is my money to kind of play with. And that's what, you know, and Katie's awesome about it. She's definitely taught me how to kind of curtail my spending because sometimes, you know, I do get a little Amazon happy. Don't we all? But it's, you know, for me, it's like, okay, if I need, I don't know, like for the most part, like if I need clothes, like it's really for work. Like Katie and I really don't go out that much. So like I have a couple pairs of jeans, a couple of shirts, you know, some dress shoes, but like I'm not going out and buying $1,000 suit. Like that's unnecessary. I'm not going, you know, when I bought my car, I bought a Ford Explorer. Like I wasn't going and buying an X5 or a Mercedes or something like that. Yeah. Like, could I probably swing it? Yeah. But why am I going to take that risk of paying, you know, $1,000 finance a month when I could pay $400 and still drive a really nice car? That literally sits in the parking lot for 12 hours a day. And then that was the same thing with the house. Like the first house we looked at was like $650,000. It's a lot of money. You know, could I have done it? Yeah, but like I was definitely stretching myself, you know. And then and this house was 2,000 square feet. The house we're living in right now is 1,500 square feet. I bought it for $150,000 less. Like, you know, to me, it was a no-brainer because I said to Katie, I was like, all right, we have one kid in this house, maybe even two, if like, you know, number two is kind of on the way or is an infant. I was like, then we move, you know, we'll be fine. Like, you know, we don't need all this crazy stuff. Like, because honestly, who's going to clean it? That was the other thing that we like were joking about. I'm like, are you going to come home and vacuum this whole house? Because I'm like, I sure as hell aren't. like look at how much we work. And like, even Katie works 9 hours a day. She's not going to want to come home and do all that stuff. Like, you know, we do the laundry, we cook, you know, we order out twice a week, nothing crazy, but like, you know, imagine having to, you know, buy that house, have a mortgage on it. And then on top of it, have a cleaning lady to you know, to come and clean the whole house. It's ridiculous. That like just keeps adding up. And then having to buy more furniture adds up. Like, it's just, it was unnecessary. So that's what this book actually really taught me. It was like, you know, what do you really need? And what do you just want? And that's what you have to be able to separate. You know, obviously, yeah. Do I want a new pair of sneakers every month? Yeah, but like, I don't need them. You know, do I want to go and, you know, I don't know, go out to a fancy dinner every week? Yeah, but like, I don't need to. Like, I'm very satisfied and being in control and knowing that, like, if God forbid, like a pandemic happens, I'm going to be okay. Because, you know, look at like what the government did. They did all these different reliefs for people because, you know, a lot of people started panicking. They didn't have the money to do it. Like, Katie and I saved our money so we didn't have to panic. Like, I was able to pay my bills. I didn't have to, you know, worry about, you know, my credit cards gaining interest or anything like that. Like, I was able to pay off everything. And that's what I think a lot of people need to know is like, it's not about having all the fancy crap in life. It's just, you don't
need the flash. So a business mentor of mine describing a mutual person we both know described him as all flash, no cash, because he spends all his cash on flash and it looks cool, but you know, all style, no substance kind of thing. So it's a valuable lesson, especially in this day and age for a lot of the younger coaches who, and again, even as I was getting out of the profession in the collegiate space, they're living at home. They don't have paying jobs, or their paying jobs or part-time internship things. They don't have a functional way to support themselves as a professional. And part of that is some of them don't have those habits down. They don't have, how do I manage my money? How do I save? How do I think the long play, right? And how do I not spend it even though I can? I mean, to wrap up this point, and we've talked about it with other people, I mean, it's where me and Rach are, and you reference Rachel. Everyone does not know Rachel's my wife. Actually was one of Matt's athletes when we were at UConn. So, I mean, the house we live in, same thing. It's less than 2,000 square feet. We have four of us and a dog, and our dog's 185-pound linebacker as a Mastiff. So we have five people, basically. And we paid significantly under what we could afford. We manage it as best we can. And we're at the point now, we both work. We have a cleaning person come once a month just to help us because we have two kids, a dog, and we both work full time. So could we pay for them to come every week? Yeah. But why spend the money once a month, have a little extra, and then we do the rest. So that's a huge thing people need to learn. I'm going to move you, Nick, to our big three. I'm actually going to skip the first one. And the reason is, the first question is your mentors and, you know, who do you go to and how did you learn? And I think we really did a good job hitting on that with talking about Craig from a business standpoint and how he developed you and how, you know, and I'm sure you can go into, and again, I know you personally, you know, your dad and your family and the other people in your circle who've helped educate you, you know, as a person, and then, you know, the other people in your circle as a professional. But I think you did a great job referencing Craig and again, the bad situation that happened with an accident, and kind of, it wasn't conversations you had. It became, now you're the guy. So that mentor mentee to now you're doing it in real time was a great story and a great way to tie that in. So I'm going to bring up one, Matt's going to hit one, and then we're going to wrap on this. So the question I have for you is, how does, and I always look at it, it's a sword, right? It's two sides of a sharp blade. How do you sharpen the sword for Coach Nick, the professional and the practitioner? And then how do you sharpen the sword for Nick, the guy, you know, husband, future father, and just a human being living life? So what do you do? Is it reading? Is it podcasts? Is it talking to people? Is it, you know, what is it that helps you sharpen the sword on both ends?
So for Coach Nick, definitely do a lot of reading. I really like Athletes Acceleration stuff. You know, it's like, you know, Mike Boyle, Lee Taft, Coach Dose, Bobby Smith. I like a lot of their stuff because it's kind of similar to how I train people. I do a lot of, you know, for me, I do a lot of single leg stuff. I really think it's just very necessary. Everyone that walks into the gym is imbalanced. Everyone walking around in daily life is not balanced. Everyone has tight hips and a tight thoracic spine. So there's always those common commonalities between everyone. So I really like reading and actually watching a lot of videos on them. I do like Kelly Starrett's stuff just because of the fact that, like, you know, I always will do mobility throughout a session. And then, you know, I talk to, you know, not even just Craig, I talk to my coworkers. I'm like, hey, what do you like, what training program are you doing? Like, Ben just finished Squattober and he likes, you know, what, you know, Sorenex guys do. Okay. So I started looking at stuff with that. You know, we've done 5-3-1 together, Joe. You know, we did Juggernaut together. I mean, I met Chad Wesley Smith because my brother-in-law Jordan is very good friends with him. You know, we went to a seminar together with him. You know, I bought every single book that Chad has. I actually got this one and I got this one right next to me on my desk. Like, I look at all this stuff just to see, like, am I missing something? Can I do something better? You know, I became friends with Coach Rachel at Yale, because one of my lacrosse players is committed there. So he is now actually on like their kind of game training program. And, you know, I talked to her about, like, this is what I've done during COVID. This is what I did before COVID. This is what I did after COVID. And now
Coach Rachel. I know her well. She's awesome. She's a super, yeah, she's a rock star. And Powell, her dad and her brother are both Rangers. Her dad, I think, was a colonel when he retired as a Ranger. Don't quote me on that. Next time I talk to Coach Rachel from Yale, I got to double check. But her brother is an active duty Ranger. I think he's actually one of your guys.
We're going to have to make that happen, man. I got to know who it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I can talk shop with her. I haven't talked to, you know, Emily in a while. But, like, I know if I literally just pick up my phone right now and call her, she'll answer the phone. She's just a good person. Same thing with Jimmy. Like, you know, same thing with you. Like, I don't have to always keep tabs on you guys, but, like, if I just literally pick up my phone and call you, you're going to be like, yo, what's up? Like, and then an hour later, we're still talking, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you sharpen your sword as just you, the person, right? Because the reason I ask those two sides is because it's easy to fall into what you do as a professional, but how are you also taking care of yourself as a person?
So for me, if Katie asks me to do something, if she's like, hey, can you get off a little bit early today? I'll make it happen. You know, for me, quality time with my wife is, you know, will trump anything, you know, that it comes in my way. You know, every morning before I wake up, before I go to work, I wake up probably an hour and a half before I need to be at work, just so I can go on honestly a mile walk with my dog, because to me it's very calming. You know, it gets me ready for the day, but it also just kind of is a way for me to decompress, even though I just slept for a couple hours. It's just a way to kind of enjoy peace and quiet, and, you know, the dog that literally I've raised, because he's my buddy. And then, you know, my friends will ask me to do stuff, you know, shout out to Kate O'Lear, another UConn swimmer, and Chris Alvanus, another UConn swimmer. If they want to get together, yeah, like, you know, I definitely make it a point to see people. You know, I'm not always giving the excuse, hey, I have to work. But they definitely understand how passionate I am about my job, and I can relate to them because they're passionate about what they do too. So I try to surround myself with good people. And then obviously, like, you know, sometimes I'll go to Craig's house, like, and we won't even talk about work at all. Like, it'll literally just be like throwing a football or something like that with the kids in the backyard for a half an hour, and then leaving. Like, nothing crazy, but it's just, again, just something to do that doesn't have to do work.
No, I think you pretty much wrapped it all up, man. The last question we usually ask people is, how do you find that work-life balance? But sounds like you're already kind of on your way with that. You already talked about what you're going to do when the kid comes, things like that. So anything else you want to touch on from that standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've never been a father before. I mean, I have
it's super easy.
Five nephews.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. From what I've heard, I've five nephews. They're all various ages. I have a niece that's Katie's sister's daughter, and then Katie's sister and Jordan are also pregnant, Joe. They're due with a little boy in February. So, I mean, I've been around kids. Katie's been around kids. Like, I'm not really, like, when Katie found out that she was pregnant, she told me, like, I was very calm about it. I wasn't freaking out about it at all. And people are like, how are you not freaking out? I'm like, what's there to freak out about? It's going to happen. Like, it's going to happen at some point. If it was not now or a year from now, like, it's going to happen. Like, and, you know, anything that comes into my way, guys, like, I'm going to take it like a man and figure out how to do it. Like, that's just how I'm going to do it. And I'm going to learn and I'm going to adapt my lifestyle to the next chapter of my life.
So the last question, then, let's wrap this up with this one. What was the best investment as a coach or as a person? You could choose one for each. You spent $500 or less on.
Best investment.
This one always makes people think, Joe. People hate spending money.
This guy's no. This is. I'm curious.
Yeah, listen, like, so I mean, like, Joe, I told you about, like, during COVID, Matt, I packed probably 500-600 pounds of plates in my car, a trap bar, a regular bar, all this, a bench, all this stuff, and then I was packing like random dumbbells in it. I destroyed this Jeep that I had. I put holes in sidewalls. Like, I'm surprised that honestly Jeep told me just to buy and not to buy the car out because it was damaged. So I actually bought a pair of Power Block dumbbells to have, just because, you know, it depended on the person I was with. Like, I mean, some people can lift 20 pounds. Some people can lift 90 pounds. eBay obviously gouged me. So they are probably $500. They weren't $500. They were like $1,200. But you know, when I did it, I was like, fuck, do I really need to spend this money? But I'm like, no, I'm going to make it back because this is going to give me a little bit more use to progress them. And then, you know, and it did, like, you know, I paid them right back. It wasn't an issue, but it was just obviously something that I needed to get. But first, like, honestly, as a coach, just different types of books and stuff like that. You know, it's just, I don't have to read all of them. Like, I just kind of skim through it and see what I like and what I don't like. And then I kind of, you know, see how I can, you know, put that into my training style. Because, like, Joe, I mean, I remember when you asked me, what was my training philosophy when I was an intern? I'm like, I don't have a philosophy because it's constantly changing with the evolution of training. You know, there's, you know, I'm not set in stone. Like, if something else comes out that's better than what I'm doing, okay, I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to process it. And I'm going to see if it justifies me changing the way I go. Or do I kind of just say, no, that's not for me. Cause it's not, you know, that's not the clientele that I have. And then for outside of that, I don't know. I spent a lot of money on Bentley. So he's the best thing I ever bought. To be completely honest, like walking into a house and a dog just running at you with his tail wagging is the best feeling ever. Obviously, yes, Katie greets me hello, but like, you know, Mango.
Wait till I think this is where Matt's going to go. Wait till you come home. You got the dog. Then you got the kid going, and you got the wife looking at you like, it's your turn.
Here you go.
And that's when I'm going to get the chest strap, put the kid on, take the dog for a walk with the kid in my chest.
See, this is good planning right here, man. You've already got a whole system ready to go.
Yep. Telling you, I try to plan everything out. That's just how I am. Someone's like, are you gonna are you gonna wait to figure out the gender? Like, I'm like, no, like, I have to know what the gender is. Like, are you kidding? Do you guys even know me? Like, for asking that question?
Yeah, no, because as soon as you know it's the paint, it's the colors, it's the toys, it's the knowing you. Yes, it's as soon as you have the answer to the question, you can go down the rabbit hole. So
I'm sitting technically in the baby's room right now. There's nothing in here besides a bed and desk. And guess what? The desk is going downstairs and the bed's going somewhere else.
No, hey man, I know Matt's been there. I've been there, especially now with two of them. I mean, oy. So, all right. Awesome, Nick. Again, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because it's just a different experience. It's a hustle. It's, you know, overcoming the adversities. It's taking on the challenges of your boss, you know, being injured. And again, knowing you the way I do and knowing your story of how you got there, it's the fundamental things that everyone we've talked to says, you know, it's learning from failure, you know, taking the challenge head on, having a good circle of people, constantly learning, right? Never just accepting the status quo. So in hearing it, and again, for people listening, it's another person saying it in their way with their words and their story. So hopefully, you know, something clicks, right? As coaches, for all of us, we always know, and I know the two of you well enough to say, like, when I coached people, I tried. And at some point, if it didn't click, it wasn't them, it was me. So I tried to find someone else. And maybe they said the exact same thing, but they said it a different way. They said it in a different tone. They said it with a different word. And it clicked for that person. That was the key. So again, thank you for coming and sharing. And hopefully it clicked for somebody tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing I'll leave you with, Joe, is like, anyone that's out there right now, appreciate where you are in this field, because honestly, like, this is probably the most rewarding field. Like, if you were a former athlete or just, you know, someone that loved sports or even just loved, you know, making people better, you know, that's what it's about. Like, it's not about, you know, the money or the fame or anything like that. Like, you're making an impact on someone, you know, it might be a small impact or it might be a large impact. And you know what? It's going to carry with them for the rest of their lives. And they're like, wow, you know, I remember when Nick trained me. I remember when you trained me, Joe. Like, I remember those things. Like, I remember when you were my boss. I remember when Jimmy was my boss and Emily was my boss. Like, I know those things. And like, I always take it to heart, because we were joking around the other day, cleaning up the facility. And I was like, you guys would be ripped apart right now if Joe, Emily, or Jimmy were here. And they're like, why? I'm like, because all the fucking numbers on the dumbbells are all over the place. Put them the right way.
That's an OCD problem, like, too, though. That's a type A OCD.
And they're just like, you. And then one of the guys is like, you had that too. I'm like, yes. I'm like, it is a tradition to have all the dumbbells like that. Like, and they're just like, holy crap. I'm like, they're like. And so then I forgot what else I did. I'm like, oh, I tucked in my shirt. And they're like, wow, you bringing back Hofstra, Nick, or what? I'm like, I might have to.
Standards of excellence. So, hey, signing off, Powell, anything left? And then last, after, if Powell has anything, Nick, how can people find you, whether that's website, social media, you know, blah, 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 so people know where you are and then know Combine. So, Powell first.
Nick, I appreciate coming on, man. You did an amazing job. You gave us a completely different view of, you know, something I don't have a lot of experience on the private side. So it was awesome to see and hear. And your story's badass, man. Like, I want to hear that you own the place and run multiple of your places and just have them all over Connecticut. So when I come home to visit, I got a place to train. It's all selfish. Yeah, that's absolutely where I want to go.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome to.
Appreciate that, man. Hey, congrats on the kid. Congrats on the house. And if you need anything, man, just reach out. But thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Cool. Absolutely. Thank you. And then for reaching out to, you know, check out our facility, it's combinetrainingct.com. You know, you can reach me at nickc@combinetrainingct.com. My Instagram is N, then Sarah, C-E-R-R-A, then the number 10. I really don't post that much. A lot of it's just Katie and my dog. But I mean, if you want to kind of see, you know, there's a couple things of training on there. And then again, Combine Training CT for Instagram as well. There's, we put a you know, quite a few things up there, you know, weekly, just, you know, different PRs and stuff like that. So it's a good facility. It's not, to me, it's not all about being sexy. It's about getting the job done. And that's what we do there. And I think, you know, again, we create a positive environment there that everyone wants to come and train with us. So, you know, nice. Hopefully we see you guys soon there.
Nice, nice. Well, hey, man.
Joe, come down.
Yeah, hey, man. As soon as I get some time, it's easy for me. I can jump down and I'm about, you know, like I said, about a half an hour, 40 minutes away. So, all right. Hey, thank you guys. Have a great night. I'm closing this out. We're all getting kicked out right now. Be well.
All right. Later.